Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place. By working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies, we keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
With infinite complacence, people went to and fro over the earth about their little affairs, serene in the assurance of their dominion over this small, spinning fragment of solar driftwood, which by chance or design, man has inherited out of the dark mystery of time and space.
When you're all caught up with Into the Fray and need another great interview-based podcast to listen to, head over and subscribe to Jim Harold's Campfire. Jim is one of the OGs of paranormal podcasting, and his shows have been downloaded over 60 million times. He talks to real people with true and fascinating experiences, from the spooky and scary to the heartwarming. There's been a ghost story involving serial killer Ted Bundy, an 8-legged demon, and a recipient's true address that the mailman noticed was not of this earth. You can tune in to Jim Harold's Campfire on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to Into the Fray. So on this edition of Into the Fray, I have on with me Sally Gage. And Sally, from the sounds of it, you have had not only a lifetime of experiences, but you're also pretty heavy into investigating and researching. And, you know, not to tease anybody, because I think I would like to go in succession with some of your stories, and we'll start with, you know, why you do all the things that you do. But I don't want anybody to go anywhere, because you were mentioned on Into the Fray episode 302, and I titled that the Kudzu Kelpie. And of course, that was Mark Muncy of Erie, Florida, on with me. And he mentioned the report of the truck driver in North Florida, just outside Jacksonville, and that he saw something moving in the kudzu vines, and it ended up being a horse made up of kudzu vines, and it scared literally the piss out of him. And he pulled over and he had to clean himself up. And not 2 weeks later, before Mark had even released this report that he had gotten, he mentioned that someone had emailed him, a friend of his, and had also seen this quote unquote kudzu kelpie just outside of Jacksonville, and it had run at their car. And that was you. So we are going to hear finally your account of this kudzu creature, kudzu kelpie. And I'm very excited to hear the account, because it was, you know, kind of Mark's side of just this email that you had sent. But anyhow, First, though, Sally, I want to know how you got into this. Was it personal experiences, or were you just kind of always into the stranger subjects?
Well, I was born into it, honestly. My grandmother and my mother were prophetic dreamers, and they would dream of things yet to come. And so I always grew up with stories of don't be afraid of if XYZ would happen because I had a dream. Don't worry if you hear XYZ because I had a dream. This is what I grew up with. So I was a timid child, and so it did bother me, and I didn't really want it, but it did happen. And I saw my mother after she had passed. I had experienced things in the woods that I couldn't explain. It was a Bigfoot experience, really, that really kind of tipped it, but I didn't have the words to really express it. My mother and I were lost in the woods, and there was a kind of a haze, a shimmer, you know, that you get for when you're dealing with a mirage. And these two creatures that were sitting kind of in a ravine stood up and walked into the shimmer and disappeared. Now, my mom immediately turned away and she says, "I didn't see that, did you? You didn't see that either." And I remember this day saying, "I see what? I don't know what I saw." And I didn't know what I saw. It didn't come to me until later that this wasn't a bear. This wasn't, you know, anything else other than I can explain as being a pair of Sasquatch that stood up and walked into a shimmer, walked into this weird barrier and disappeared. And then I started to read, and I read voraciously. And then April 1st, 1987 changed my world. It rocked my world on that day because a little song came out in Northern Michigan on WTCM radio called The Legend. I don't know if you've heard of it. I recommend Googling it, but it was meant as a joke. But it opened the door to the Dogman stories that are so prevalent now. And that's how it started. But as for the kudzu creature, I was in the midst of doing a rescue for my father-in-law. I was driving to New York to pick him up. And I was right on the heels of Hurricane Elsa. It had just literally rolled through. And so everything was wet and everything was in turmoil. And we got on the road very, very early in the morning, because we just couldn't sleep. So we were too long, and we had just passed Stark. So we were right between the area of Stark and Jackson. A lot of swampland and whatnot. And growing up on a farm and growing up a child of equine, I raised and trained horses. I was on the Michigan State Equestrian Team, Michigan State Horse Judging Team. I know what a horse looks like. I know the distinguishing characteristics of a horse. And I saw movement on the side of the road. And the back line was that of a horse. It was very much distinguishing. It was a horse coming up out of the ditch. But when it came up out of the ditch, it really wasn't a horse. And I knew this because the legs, the bottom where the hooves were transparent. And as soon as it came up right by the caution barrels of the road construction, the front hoof, what would have been the front hoof, touched the concrete just in front of my car, and it disappeared. It just completely, all of it disappeared. And what it looked like was a horse shape that was covered, literally draped in kudzu and vine. You could see the shimmer of the water that would have been on this vegetation. Everything was there that would be a horse. It was visible. And then all of a sudden, it wasn't. And I asked my wife, who was riding with me, I go, "Did you just see that?" And she was pale. She was just completely pale. I shook her out of it and was like, "Did you see that?" And she's like, "Yes, I just saw that." So I'm like, "Okay, let's stay awake, because obviously, things are about and are creeping." let's keep our eyes open. And I was not disappointed. We did see something else.
You saw something right after that?
Yeah, I did. I saw a pair of dogmen chasing deer. And the only reason I knew that they were dogmen is because the height they were, they're about 8.5 to 10 feet high, that were about 3 feet above the deer eyes. I saw eye shine. And I saw the deer bounding, because you can see the amber eyes of the deer bound. And above it was these pair of red eyes that were not bounding. They were like a stationary run right behind them. I literally exclaimed, "Holy shit." And Lisa did exactly the same thing on her side of the car. But she saw a completely different set of eye shine and the height of the dogman, and I saw one on the other side of the road. They're hunting in a V formation, driving the deer towards the road. And that shook me. That shook me a little bit. I don't like being between dogmen of that nature. I don't like that. And as soon as we got away from the area, I had to write it down, and I waited until I got to a hotel just to calm down. And then I contacted Mark, because I'm like, "Mark, have you heard of this horse thing?" Because I've heard of Kelpies, but I didn't put them into Florida because I'd never heard of them being here. And I didn't have the words. I'm like, it just looked like a horse covered in vines. I was like, "Have you heard of this?" And he's like, "Oh my God, yes, I did. I had a trekker tell me this story, and you're not going to believe this." So, and that's exactly how it happened. And I even forgot to talk about the dogmen with him at first, because I was so focused on the horse. When I actually calmed down and started recalling and writing down what I've seen, I remember, it's like, yeah, I had dogmen too. It was a supernaturally active night because of the storm going.
How far down the road after you've seen this kudzu creature did you see the dogman hunting situation going down?
It was not even 10 minutes. Not even 10 minutes. From what I understand from the researchers that do research on boots on the ground, there's a pack in northern Florida that roam the swamps. And so I know their general location would be in that area. So I honestly was keeping my eyes open for deer, and that's exactly what I saw. But there was, behind the deer, they were being driven by something taller with red eyes. Now, I didn't get a detailed look at them. I just saw eye shine, and it was on eye shine on both sides of the car. They were literally forming a driving line for these deer in this pack scenario. So I was kind of sitting in the middle of that, and I really wasn't worried about exact detail of it. I just was worrying about getting out of that driving formation. So I wouldn't have them on either side of my car. I would be out of that range.
And about what time of day was this?
This was early in the morning. This was approximately about 3:45 to 4 o'clock in the morning. So there was not a lot of traffic. There was not a lot of anybody on the roads, because it literally was right on the heels of the storm. It was a relatively calm drive. Just everything supernatural popped out.
And to you, that's an interesting point, is the fact that the hurricane came through, everything just got kind of stirred up.
Yeah, I've noticed that, even Mark has noticed that in the past, that after a significant atmospheric disturbance, such as a hurricane or severe storms or atmospheric anomalies happen, energies get picked up. And when energies get picked up, supernatural things tend to pop up, that I've noticed with talking with people and my own experiences. That's one of the things that we agree on, that the energies pick these things up.
And not to mention, Florida is just covered in so much water. That probably adds to it as well.
Yep, it's water, and the way the limestone, the way that even the state is built, going back centuries, there's never been a hurricane that actually hits like St. Pete itself directly, not since 1921. So it's been over 100 years, and there's kind of like this weird protective bubble over that area, which is exactly, if you look at the weather reports for Elsa, the hurricane that went through, it kind of dissipated over St. Pete and then came back in the panhandle and then shot right across to Jacksonville. It was this weird, because we were bracing for it. We're on the west side, and that's a dangerous side of the state to be on when you're getting a good hurricane coming up your coast. And the flooding would be devastating, absolutely devastating. So we were watching it very, very closely. And then it just disappeared. And then it reappeared and ran over Jacksonville and right up the East Coast. And we were right on its tail the entire way up. So it was a strange night.
I would say so. And I don't blame you for hurrying to the hotel and being like, okay, we're not going back out for a little bit here.
There was a little bit of shaking involved and a whole lot of, I need to calm down going on.
I mean, the kudzu horse would have been enough. The Kelpie would have been enough. But then to see what you did 10 minutes later, you're going, okay, then let's just chill for a little bit. So before we cover Dogman more, which is a subject I am certainly fascinated by, zipping back to your Bigfoot experience when you were younger, if you hadn't have actually seen the creatures walk into that shimmering, would the shimmering, like once they walked into it, was the shimmering then totally gone as if it had never existed and they never existed?
It was it dissipated. It was like really tall. And then it kind of worked its way down to almost knee level to a very small plane and then just kind of like went away.
Mm.
It didn't, it was like, it was a large event on the horizon. And then after they walked through, it just kind of gone and then went away. That's the best way I could describe it. And it was at a distance. I wasn't terribly close, but I wasn't far enough away in my heart to be safe from it.
Right.
But I always remember, and I never forget that whenever I see that weird shimmer, I'm just like, there's a part of me that doesn't want to look because I don't want to see anything come out. So I always look away. Even though I know it's a mirage on the beach, I'll look away just because I really don't need to see that. I'll leave that to the professionals.
Have you been in the woods again and seen that shimmer?
No, I've been in the woods, yes, many, many times. But I have not seen that shimmer in the locale because this was in northern Michigan. This was in an area around Petoskey. And so it was in the deep woods and there's, you know, bears and critters that, you know, you're not the top of the food chain there. And so when I saw that, I knew I definitely wasn't and I was a child. And so it was terrifying. And even though I've gone back into the woods, I have not seen, knock on wood, that shimmer in the woods again.
And how about the Sasquatch, Sally? Were they the quote-unquote classic Sasquatch, mm-hmm. super tall, covered in hair? I mean, were they the same size? Did they look at you guys at all?
They did not look at us. There was a larger one and a smaller one. It was the standard, what you would consider a Sasquatch, a very primate looking, pardon me. And so they're very primate looking, broad shoulders, but the smaller one was a felter. It was not as muscular. So I could only assume that it could have been a youngster, but not a baby, just smaller and build. And it was like they were sitting in this little nook of an area. And then they just stood up and then they walked in. They didn't look at us. They didn't make an indication that a scent was caught. They didn't do anything other than just stand up and walk in. The whole event took maybe 10 seconds at the most. It was very, very fluid and peaceful. There was no predatory feeling about it. They just walked away. And it's almost like they walked through a door and they just went away. My mind as a child, you know, I was terrified because that one single event was terrifying. But it was only just a click in my life of the supernatural. And it was just one of the most significant because it was a first. And it took some time to deal with what I actually did saw. And it took time to accept that what I did see was something that would be considered paranormal, that would be considered supernatural, that would be considered not normal for, you know, people wandering in the woods collecting mushrooms. It was something that was extra. And so as I grew older and I started studying things that go bump in the night, I started to accept it more. Because even to this day, it's still in the core of me that I'm still very scared. And even though now I look for them, it's something that still terrifies me. This is something I had to accept. So.
If you hadn't have seen them walk into that shimmering portal or whatever we want to call that, and then you started into the research and you're going out in the woods, do you think that you would still be in the flesh and blood camp or maybe 50-50 if you hadn't have seen that?
I honestly, this is where my Mulder Scully is at war here. I want to believe, but I believe in flesh and blood and science. Extra dimension, yeah, it's completely possible. I can't scientifically prove it, but I believe that it could be. But I want to see more. I want to see scat. I want to see fur. I want to see blood. I want the physicality of the science so I can see it and touch it and analyze it and do that to anchor it to be no longer, you know, it's just Wacky Sally doing her UFO research or whatever. It's where there's science involved. And so I believe I'm 50-50 on it. I believe there could be extra dimensional. I've seen it. I didn't make it up. I didn't dream it as a child because my mother was right there. And even though she has passed on, he believed me. Even though she was scared, he knew what she thought. I knew what I saw. It was there. I can't explain it, but it was there. All I can do is, with the tools given now, is say, yeah, they're probably extra dimensional. There's something to this because Skinwalker Ranch, again, dealing with complete extra dimensional beings and whatnot, it is completely possible that it could be more than just a spot in the United States, that this actually did happen. I wasn't dreaming. I wasn't crazy. I wasn't doing anything of that nature because smoking and drinking was not, you know, a thing with the age bracket that I was in. So why couldn't it be?
At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place by working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies. We keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
This podcast is sponsored by Skylight Frame. Mother's Day is almost here. What are you getting her? Something that shows you care. Something that makes her feel loved. Something that won't stress you out. Something like the Skylight Frame. The Skylight Frame is the perfect gift. It's a touchscreen photo frame your whole family can upload photos to, from wherever they are in the world. It's a way to share with her all the moments that matter. It sets up in seconds. You can even make sure that it's already loaded with photos when your mom opens her Mother's Day gift. And her Skylight Frame can hold thousands of the treasured photos you share. It's an easy, heartfelt way for mom to stay connected with those who matter most. It really is the perfect gift. Now, as a special Mother's Day offer for our listeners, Get 15% off your purchase of a Skylight Frame when you go to skylightframe.com/easy. That's SKYLIGHTFRAME.com/easy. Get 15% off your Mother's Day purchase now at skylightframe.com/easy.
So besides the words extra dimensional, you also just said the word extra, which I like because, and I also like your explanation. So you're saying, you know, when they're here, they're flesh and blood. And like you want to see bone and blood and hair and all that stuff to get the evidence. But like you said, maybe they just have that extra, whatever that ability is, to pop in and out and go into these little shimmery spaces. And of course, we've heard of other things coming in and out of shimmery spaces that are really pretty darn terrifying.
Yeah, and dangerous. Dangerous because of maybe what they've encountered before on our side, because we're not the tamest creatures on this earth. It could be very much dangerous. And even it's world-altering. You're dealing with something that you have a known worldview, and you're dealing with shaking the very foundations of your known reality. It can be psychologically scarring, which I live through, and I know others who have experienced, whether it be a UFO or if it's a dogman or if it's a Sasquatch or if it's a ghost or a demon or an elemental. People have experienced something that altered their worldview, and it takes a while to adjust. I am open to it. I am open to them having something extra. Their ability to communicate telepathically is come under fire, but it's like, why couldn't they? A portion of their brain could be activated to tap our consciousness, to communicate non-verbally. Why not?
So
yep, communicate chemically. So
what about dogman then, Sally? Do you feel they're exactly the same in that they're flesh and blood while they're here, but they have that extra thing, and then they can kind of paranormally speaking do other things that we consider very, very strange for a straight flesh and blood animal?
Yeah, only because, again, this is with experience. I have never physically seen, other than the eye shine, a dogman. I've never come across that. And the people that have experienced these creatures, they're soul shaking. These are very large predatory creatures. And sometimes people have been said that they can hear them in their head, or they can't verbalize really, but they can more mentally project words that they this is what they say. Well, heavy into my dogman research, early 2000s, I was living, eating, breathing, researching dogmen. Up in Tampa, up near Lute, I knew what I feel is very close. I'm talking about the telepathy thing. When they say when you're looking for a dogman, they can sense it, and they can either leave or they'll try to scare you away. They don't want to be found. And I was looking. I was actively looking. I felt in my mind, I just felt like something was off. And so I came home and I put my gear away and take a shower and get into bed. And the dream I had, I could see it coming. I could feel it coming. I could feel the curiosity. I could feel, why are you looking at me? I could feel the words, if that makes sense. And this juvenile, which was red with a red coloring with a black stripe down its face and back, appeared. I stopped in my dream, and then I can lucid the dream. I can control my dreams where I can, if something is scaring me, I can leave. And so I did. And it followed to another dream. And then it did it again. And I finally turned and faced it, went at it. And I knew it was a juvenile, and I knew it was just curious, but I went at it to scare it, and it went away. And I told this to other researchers, and they said, that was kind of a warning. Don't, whatever you're doing or wherever you are, don't. Because if that's a juvenile, that means there is a path nearby, and that could be dangerous. And so I stopped research immediately. And I never had another dream like that. I never saw it again. But when I'm up in the Lutz area, I kind of feel watched. I'm up there in the wooded areas. I can feel it. And so I just don't go up there now.
We always hear reports of Dogman, and I would say, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong, but 90% or more of it is they are just pissy as hell. I mean, who knows why? Do you have any, you know, background on why they are just so very angry? A lot of times Bigfoot are more little creepers, and they're just watching, and yeah, they don't want to be seen, but they're not going to puff up their chest and, you know, essentially run you down. And we've heard reports like that of Dogman.
Yeah. My theory, my background, just to make a quick side jaunt, just so we know, I am an anthropologist. I have my degree in anthropology. I have studied human culture, but I also have a degree in animal science. So I study animal behavior as well. I'm not just stumbling into this. It's like, oh, I found this cool library book. Let's go this way. I have actual background in both animal science and anthropology. And these are anthropomorphous animals. They are still very animal brained. And our parasitic use of land has encroached their territories to the nth degree. If they are anything like wolves, they run a territory. They're territorial. They don't like other things in their territory, which is why you get a lot of the Sasquatch and the Dogman combatants. They don't get along. Dogmen don't get along really with a whole lot of anybody's. Not to say that they can't, they just don't. They're just territorial. Canines, what these are by the very looks of them, or what reported looks of them, they just don't like to be mucked with. They want to live their life to be left alone. They don't want, need, or desire westernization, popularity. That's not their modus operandi. They want to live, eat, make little pups, and live their world unmolested. I can respect that. But our world is shrinking smaller and smaller. We're losing natural habitats all over the world. Even things that we don't think as being really driven out are, like the land between the lakes area. It's beautiful and expansive, but, you know, you've got people on all sides. And that's a notoriously aggressive pack that's there. And you get up in there, and it's possibly your life. And there's no escape routes. There's no easy way to remain undetected with video surveillance and people being 24/7 all over. It's so we're seeing them now more and more as we encroach on their territories. And yeah, they're grumpy because they just want to be left alone. My take anyway.
And since you've heavily researched both, do you think there are just as many Bigfoot as there are Dogman in the U.S.?
Yes, and I think they're almost quasi-speciated, kind of like Yeti and Skunk Ape and the Barton Booger and things of that nature. I think they're different names for variants depending on where you get it. Dogmen the same. You're reporting some that have tails and some that don't. You've got, I don't know how many, like 12 different variants now, where they're pug-nosed, or they're really tall ears, or they've got the weird shaped legs. Some are more werewolf-like, some are more dog-like. So there's variants. And may not be completely speciated, but they're definitely like breed-oriented, like dogs. You can put a husky next to a pug and they're dogs, but they're completely different. And I think this is what's happened with these creatures as well. It's a theory, and again, can't scientifically prove it because I don't have blood, bone, and hair. But it would make the most sense based on other people's research that I've gone through and going through reports. Almost every major landmass has some sort of dogman or Sasquatch on it. Am I wrong? The only place I haven't seen it is Hawaii, only because it's an island. And to get a creature that big on such a small series of islands would be near impossible. But every other place does, including England and Scotland and Ireland. They have the cynocephali in Italy and the wolves of Germany and things of that nature that are dogmen or wolf-like that would explain the bipedal canid and werewolf. If you take all of this information about bipedal canids and you put it together and say, this would make sense why somebody saw a werewolf, because it would look like a werewolf. It may not be, you know, Jim down the street, but it's still indicative of a werewolf. It would have human type features. It would have, if you look at the skull, it would not have a foramen magnum that would be in the back of the skull, would be underneath, which would be indicative of bipedalism. Same way with a butterfly pelvis. So you have those physical distinguishing characteristics that would say this is bipedal as opposed to this is just standing up like bears do.
Yeah, I guess it's that whole thing where you're going, well, Jim's a real a-hole, but maybe not that big of an a-hole, you know, to be a dog.
He's not going to eat your cat. Yeah. Well, he might, but it's not going to be because he's a werewolf.
Yeah, you don't have to run in at the full moon, okay? Jim's going to stay Jim. So Sally.
Exactly. And he's like that 24/7.
Yeah, that's right. Yes. And so is a dog man. He's just a big pissy dog man. So exactly. As we know, no significant bones found for Bigfoot. And that is, of course, the same as a dog man. And of course, you're talking about, you know, just science-based stuff, which I love, which it means that, you know, it looks like Bigfoot. They have clans and families and units that they'll move around with for the most part. We've heard of rogues, of course. I'm sure that's a thing with a dog man as well. But pack animals, right? So they have these family units. So is the thought then with the bones, you know, you've heard of the theory that Bigfoot then buries their dead, and that's why it's even harder to find bones in the wild. And we know that's hard anyway for even the species that we know of that are proven. Do you think then that the thought is the same for Dogman? If one of them is felled, then a fellow Dogman comes and buries them because they know that people finding the truth would be a bad thing.
One of the things, if you look at our nature as we know it, there are things that animals do that would run contrary to how humans would do things. One of them is animals generally, whether they're a prey animal or or an animal that is hunted, they eat the placentas of their young, correct? Like you'll see a deer or even your rabbits, dogs that eat the placenta. My theory, and it is just a theory, it is not scientifically proven, that with a higher intelligence where they don't want to leave evidentiary support behind, you would eat your dead. You would dispose of it the most cleanly way possible, where there wouldn't be scent behind, to leave a chance of other predators, rival packs, humans, to find blood, skin, bones behind. You would give them, it would be a burial practice, but it would be done so there would be no further predation upon the primary pack. There would be no scent trace left. there would be no evidence to follow the family unit away. They would just be gone, which would lend support to why we couldn't find bone, why we couldn't find hair or flesh left after even a large battle of between cats or Sasquatch and Dogman or what have you, eating your dead or claiming your dead in that manner would alleviate that from the equation. They would no longer be there to be disturbed. They would be forever with the clan.
I like that explanation. Yeah. Barry goes further, and then even further is they eat them. That actually does make a whole lot of sense to me. Yes, it certainly does.
Nope. This would be, I'm running on the science side of this, where I'm looking at other species and their practices. And they, from birth, you eat from birth, you eat from death. It would be a cyclical that would make sense.
Yeah, especially for something of a higher intelligence like that, right?
Right.
Now, what about,
as I said, people generally don't eat other people. I mean, they have, but as a funerary practice, that's not something that's socially acceptable. But maybe their society, it is, and expected.
Right. Right. Yeah, to us, that seems pretty dark and disgusting, but to them, it's just normal. So how about this pack in North Florida? What kind of reports have come in about this pack? What's the closest that anyone's gotten to one, or any physical interaction? We don't hear about that a whole lot with Dogman, but what kind of reports are you getting out of there?
Well, there has been people, this is, you can visit other sites that have people reporting Dogman experiences, but from what I understand, there's two significant packs in northern Florida, one that's closer, more really Georgia than it is Florida, but they run the same territory down to a dark area where the three prisons are. There's also a swamp preserve, which is a state-run part. There's also those weird circle lakes that are there in that area. It's kind of a big triangle in the northern Florida. From what I understand, I don't know for sure because I don't have tagging mechanisms on Dogman, and I'm not boots on the ground anymore. I have retired from boots on the ground. I can only take secondhand reports. But it seems that in that swampland, in that area between Stark and Jacksonville, Georgia, there seems to be two cats that range and wander all the way down. I've heard reports, like I said, in northern Tampa, they're in Lutz area, and over towards Bradenton, there's a national park down there that they have gone that far south. They don't really go into, from what I understand, the big swamps of South Florida, because that's where the skunk ape really are prevalent. And so they kind of don't overlap those areas. But it seems to be two packs in the North Florida area.
So considering what I've learned about you, and especially that Bigfoot sighting that you had of the two Sasquatch early on, I'm assuming that you probably would not want to actually see a Dogman.
Oh, see, I am so split on that. It's like, yes, I desperately want to see with my own eyes, to see them move, to see the intelligence in their eyes. To see that, but in order to see the intelligence in their eyes, I'm entirely within striking distance, and I have an overdeveloped sense of staying alive. I do want to see one, but no, I don't want to see one.
Right.
That makes sense.
Yeah, that completely makes sense, especially when it comes to a Dogman. And I think that even just seeing a Bigfoot, and I've said it many, many times, I'm just dying to see one so bad. But sometimes, in order, like you said, to confirm 100% what you're looking at, you have to be pretty damn close, and that could change your whole life.
Or end it. Dogmen. They're not cuddly. They're not your, you know, fucky. They'll take a chunk if given a chance, especially if you read the report, especially the Land Between the Lakes family decimation, that blows my mind. That is coming from several credible sources that they just walked right into this family's camp and chewed them right up, all of them. And so that's kind of terrifying. And even hearing reports from people just doing normal things, just going for a walk, where they'll walk with them and they'll just watch them. That's terrifying. That's really, really terrifying for something that is so soundless in the woods until they want to be heard. And then you've got something that is 8 to 10 feet that is astronomically huge. And by our own admission, something that is unnatural. That is, like I said, that's foundation shaking. I wouldn't hesitate to pee. I understand why people would, and I want to see it, but I don't want to see it. I'll be happy to read about other people's encounters and say that you're not crazy, that this did happen to you. Now it's time to start thinking internally how we can cope with dealing with a new reality.
Sally, I'd love for you, when you have time, to listen to, and I don't remember what episode number it is, but it's called Dogman on Temple Road, and he's now a judge, and he had a horrifying dogman experience. And I just, one of these days, if you ever think about it, I'd love for you to listen to that one, because that's on my no list, and I bet it would be on yours too. So anyway.
Probably. There's some delicious dogman stories out there. That some of them, there was one of an ambulance driver and his paramedic in his ambulance in Connecticut, that I was listening to it, and everything that he was describing was, this was predatory behavior, and this is what a coordinated attack would do. I don't envy their position, and I don't remember what it is, but I'm sure you could Google it and you could find this story, and it is just chilling to the bone. And it's just like, oh my God, I can't. I'm just going to come over here and I'm going to read, you know, Alice in Wonderland and be happy for a while.
Right. Yeah. Just curl in a ball and eat some candy and read something nice. Darn it. Yeah.
You know, Tootsie Roll is a medication. I'm just saying.
Heck yeah, it is. Yes, it should be prescribed.
Indeed.
Their hunting tactics are just flawless, you know, like a pack of wolves. So, it's a big no.
And that's one of the things, understanding wolf behavior. I raised a high percentage wolf dog when I was in high school going into college, because I was studying wolves and wolf communication. So I had, his name was Shuka, and Shuka was very much, very wolf-like, except for his coloring was very Malamute looking, but his percentage, his blood percentage was very high. He was 83%, I believe, Alaskan timber wolf, and, you know, 18% Malamute. And so this animal, his movement, his communication, his eyes, the way wolves don't bark, they growl and grunt and things of that nature. I learned so much working with that animal, that I can identify tracks and I can identify wolf calls and coyote calls and things of that nature. That only gives me basis of what I'm not looking at. So if I'm looking at dogman tracks or what have you, it's like, this is indicative of a timber wolf, but it's not a timber wolf because of XYZ. And so Shuka was such an educational inspiration for me going into this weird field of cryptozoology. And I say this because it's not just Dogman, which I'm dearly in love with, and Sasquatch, which I've always loved. It's other wild creatures that we don't see. Like, a giant panda was a cryptid until 1963. And we take a panda for granted now, but prior to that, it wasn't a scientifically designated species. Same way with the thylacine. Silas things were real. You have pictures of them, but then they've gone away. But have they? Out of Tasmania and out of Australia, there's still sightings of the thylacine. You know, we don't know how these things survive, which means we don't know how all things.
So, Sally, moving off of Dogman, something that I wanted to zip back to when it comes to your Kelpie, the kudzu creature, you said that once the hoof hit or was going to hit the pavement of the highway, it just simply disappeared. And I wanted your opinion on the fact that, I mean, that was kind of strange. Could it not cross the road? Did it not want to cross the road? Or, you know, do you think because the road itself is man-made and it wouldn't be connecting anymore with the earth and the soil and the water, what's the thought there on why it disappeared?
That's an excellent question. And that's one of them that I have thought about. I did some reading on Kelpies and what they do. They're not entirely nice creatures. They draw people to them to lure them to their death. Now, I was moving at a rate of about 45 to 50 miles an hour because I was in a construction zone. It was not a high rate of speed. I did see it come out of the ditch. And it was there on the top of the road. But as soon as it hit that barrier, the barrier, I would say that, which is a good call as being man-made, it literally, it touched it and just disappeared. It didn't look like it was looking at. The eyes were very not focused on me. They were looking forward. They were looking across the road from me. I don't know if I was an intended. I was just a happenstance encounter. I don't feel that I was threatened. I didn't feel that it was coming for me or for my wife. I just felt that it was trying to get over. It just would have stepped in front of my car. When we were right even with where it would have been, there was nothing. There was no feeling. There was no aggression. There was no fear. I don't think I was intended. Whatever it was doing, it had focused on other things, just like the dog men were 10 minutes later. They were focused on getting deer. Their Bambi breakfast was right there. They weren't interested in me. This is all happenstance. And so I feel I was very lucky that night. And I feel that the Kelpie was just trying to get from point A to point B. Not as an intended victim.
You know, it makes you wonder, you know, if these things could be infinite or however old maybe, you know, it was, how long it had been in the area, if that road was just laid right through its home, through its domain, you know, and now it's like stuck in this loop just trying to get over the damn road, but it can't.
It's entirely possible. I don't know in depth the full legends of the Kelpies. And I didn't even know that they were on this side of the pond. But it's entirely possible that it was brought over by native peoples, meaning the Irish or Scotsmen or English, who had a firm belief and from fear of them settled in the area and kind of willed them into being, which is going back to my religious studies and things of that nature. If you believe it, you can manifest it. And if this is a belief system, this is a creature that was literally brought over from another country in a foreign land, dealing with foreign things and foreign people doing foreign things, and it doesn't have a regular route that it would have like it would in Ireland. You have the Moors in Scotland and things of that nature that are very predominant. The lock system is very permanent. It's not really budged in hundreds and hundreds of years. But here in Florida, it ebbs and flows very rhythmically with the seasons and things of that nature. So it very well could be where it's like, well, I'm used to going this way. I can't go this way anymore. So it'll go another way. And I just happened to cross paths with it. It was not like I said, an evil intent. It was just a happenstance. And there's a million reasons why it could be. I can just speculate as to my experience of what it right. was and what had happened.
And I remember Mark saying, and I just found this so incredible, not only the fact that he hadn't released any information yet, and then you emailed him, I mean, 2 weeks later, it was insane to me, and I know it shocked him, was the fact that you and the trucker were essentially within, give or take, 3 miles of each other, this sighting. I think that's incredible.
Yeah, it's really very, very, very close based on what Mark had said and my experience, and I that's why I called him first. I'm like, have you collect information like this? Have you heard of this? And he's like, oh my God, yes.
Yeah.
This just happened. And I really think a lot of maybe the reason that the Kelpie was active was because we had an active storm season. We had, you know, they're digging up the land, or they're altering the pathway based on the road construction. Things were kicked up for this creature that it was collecting energy and it could manifest itself. And it just, it's moving while things are in flux, whether it be the road or the weather or what have you, it's given the energy to be seen.
Yeah. All I know is the next time a big storm rolls through there, I want to, get in the car, maybe get a posse of people so more than just myself will see it, because that's always a bummer when it's just you, and then just drive up and down that section of road. I think that would be a pretty good idea.
It would be awesome, especially with a group of people. Like I said, I have verification. I have my wife.
Exactly.
She saw it. I saw it. And we were wide awake because I had to keep my eyes open because, one, it's so late in the evening and there's so many deer, I don't want to peel a deer. And so our eyes were on the road. We just had music playing and we're talking, and here we are. Here's this thing coming up out of the ditch, plain as day. And it's a weird feeling. You've experienced things where all of a sudden it's just, you're cold, and then it's like electricity on your skin. And then you go, okay, I can't believe what I just saw. And we talked about it for that time. Oh, after the Kelpie. And then we come across the dogman coordinated attack on the deer. And I'm just like, this is getting really too much. It's like, I need coffee just to settle my nerves. And we get to the hotel and it's just like, I got to call Mark. I just got to call Mark because I can't not call Mark on this one, because this is what he does. This is what he is looking at, and this is the things that he needs. And if, like you said, if he had somebody looking for this thing on a major storm time, here, this is the area that I was in. Go. Please just be careful, because there are dogmen up there in that same area.
All I know is two more reasons to love Florida: Kelpies and dogmen. That's all I know.
Kelpies and dogmen.
Well, Sally, did you want to switch gears again and talk about your UFO sighting?
Oh, yeah, my UFO sighting. This was right after 9/11. So this was literally 2 weeks after 9/11. We were going to New Orleans just to go to New Orleans and experience it. We'd never been there on an off season, and man, was it off. We were driving US 19 up towards in the Panhandle, which is infamous for UFO sightings. And we, you know, we saw the sign, you know, 87 miles to Perry, which is 87 miles to Perry, no matter where you are. It's a geographical oddity. And we were joking about that, and we were eating jelly babies, and we had the god awful combination of lemon and coffee. And we were laughing so hard. And then all of a sudden, in the middle of the road, there was like a rat or a mouse or some kind of rodentia running at us in the middle of the road. And so I slow down and I swerve out of the way. And I'm like, oh my God, what was strange? Why was it running down the middle of the road? And there's no idea. This is so weird. And we continue joking about coffee and lemon jelly beans. And then a raccoon I'm running down the middle of the road. I mean, the middle of the road, not to the side, not across from one side to the other, down the middle of the road. I'm like, this is the Zulu? What's going on? And then a deer, same thing, coming right down the middle of the road, right at us. And I almost killed that poor deer. It's like I jerked it and I kind of hit the edge a little bit. I came in and it's like, there's something wrong. It's like animals don't run down the middle of the road. They just don't. They go across, go from side to side, not down the middle. Just then a Rick Springfield song came on the radio and I went to change it because Lisa hates Jack and Diane. She hates that song. Oh, so I went to change it and then all of a sudden a spotlight hit us. It was just right from back going forward and there was this light and I'm like, what the hell? And I look and there's no R. It's just a light in the sky and it hit us. And I'm like, Lisa, look at this. And she looked around and she's like, change the channel. And I'm like, so I went to change the channel, but it wasn't Jack and Diane. The clock read that there had been a 10-minute time shift, and it was a Prince song that came on. It was in that time frame, a 30-second for us, but it was 10 minutes based on the clock. Because I looked at it, it said, you know, 4:27. Then it was 37. That quick. We were no longer going 50 miles an hour. We were at 15 miles an hour. So time jump, speed change, song change, time change. Everything was great. It happened that quick. And I'm like, holy shit, it's a UFO. I wheel around and I could see it. It was still kind of behind us, but it was up over the trees and behind the trees a little bit. And I'm like, there it is. And I went to hit the brakes. And that's when my wife started to yell at me and beat on my arms like, no, drive. They're going to take us. And it's like, okay, we've already done been took. I need the camera. I need my camera. And it's like, so I'm driving, but I'm trying to fumble for the camera and she's beating on my arm. And then it came back up over behind us and was right there. And it's like, there was no sound. There was no lighting other than this spotlight. And I could make out silver, but I couldn't make out a shape. And I'm like, oh my God, this is totally Mulder and Scully. We're totally getting X-Files. This is awesome. And she's screaming and crying. So I had to relinquish and I had to drive away, even though I wanted to stop. I hit the gas to get out of there because she was really, really upset. And I started running it down in my head. And I'm like, look at the time. Look at how slow we were going. Look at the songs. It was Jack and Diane. Now it's not Jack and Diane anymore. It's a Prince song. It's like, oh, what just happened? What, honestly, in our mind, did we just go to sleep for 10 minutes? Did we both at the same time, driving a car, dodging animals, go to sleep for 10 minutes? He was really upset. Needless to say, I was awake until we actually hit New Orleans and hit our hotel. But it was such, for me, it was exciting and scary. And for her, it was terrifying because we don't know what happened in that 10 minutes. We have no memory. We have no recollection. We just know that there was a time jump. There was a song jump. There was a speed deceleration past normalcy and lights and wild animals. That's what I know.
Yeah, I don't know how I would respond to an experience like that. I don't know if I'd be more like you or more like Lisa, because when you realize that there's 10 minutes gone and somehow, like you said, you're still driving on the road. Granted, you've slowed down, but you haven't run off into the ditch. You know, you haven't gone into an accident. How does that happen? And what has happened to you guys in the 10 minutes? I mean, has there been any of the, you know, the other, I guess we have to call it a cliche, but the other telltale signs of, you know, marks on your body or, you know, anything else?
Yeah, I wish I could say I didn't even think about checking for marks on a body. One, it's the middle of the night in the side swamps of Florida. And two, when we got to New Orleans, we were so tired. We didn't think about that. I wish I did, but alas, I didn't. I can't verify the marks on our body, but I know that the time chunk was there because I was reaching for the radio to switch the song, and I looked at the clock. I had my eyes on the clock, and then my eyes weren't on the clock, and everything had changed. I have not seen Lisa so terrified, and she was. She was in tears, and he was begging me to go. And it's like, like I said, my inner core was like, I need my camera. But unfortunately, this was before camera phones really. And my camera was in the back seat. So wouldn't be as easy as it is today. If it happened today, my cell phone would be like, click it, click it, click it. It would be there. But it was such an exciting event for me, because like I said, I grew up with this stuff. That wasn't my first UFO. That was just the closest UFO. It was in the height of a resurgence of X-Files, and really, it tickled me in all kinds of fun ways, and I just wanted to see it. But like I said, Lisa was absolutely terrified, and the thing, I can't explain it. I can't explain what happened to that 10 minutes. I can't explain what had actually happened. Why did those animals run straight down the middle of the road? Why did they not cross from side to side? Why did something so close make no sound? None. What could it have been? Could it have been a military project, because we were there in the Gulf, in the Panhandle, and there is activity there from experimental aircraft from the military? Yes, it could be. But why the missing 10 minutes? Did we see something that we were not supposed to see? Did we stumble on something so late in the night that it was our own people that were doing it, and we just had to retcon it? Just boom. I don't know. I don't know if it was terrestrial or extraterrestrial. All I know is there was a UFO, an unidentified flying object. It was something that I did not know, I could not identify, and we experienced this set of events. That's what I did. So, exciting.
Again, very lucky that Lisa was there with you, right? Somebody to corroborate. That's always important. Does exactly. Lisa ever bring this up?
She is a very logical person, and she is an academic. She is a college professor. Her logic brain is in conflict with experiences that has happened to her. She does not really like to talk about things like that because, one, her professional credentials. If she was suddenly the college professor that, you know, sees the UFOs and ghosts and dead people, which she does, she views that it could no longer be her job, her career would be non-credible. So she doesn't do a whole lot of talking around that. She does privately, and she does when we're in group of people who are like-minded, she will open up and talk. Because she, based on her heritage, she would be considered a natural witch. And she does see dead people, and she can communicate, but it freaks her out because she does have such a logical, screwed-on foundation. It messes with her life and her terms of reality. So when you're dealing with UFOs and dealing with the supernatural, yes, can see them very well. Can she deal with them? Not really well. So she kind of remains quiet. And when she's comfortable, she will talk about it.
Yeah, I can't say I really blame her. I mean, once you're in that situation and you're realizing there's 10 minutes gone and somehow you're still driving down the road, yeah, you're kind of going, oh, great. So what, we're up in the craft like Travis Walton? Like, what the hell happened, you know?
I don't think we went that far, but I do think it would be kind of like, well, let's do a scan. Let's see who these interlopers are. Mm-hmm. It would be kind of like a stop and scan. Okay, there's no weapons. There's no there's nothing but jelly babies and coffee. And, you know, it's not something that would be threatening. So we were just kind of, I believe that we were just kind of stand. And then it was kind of like a catch and release. It was like, oh, look what we got. Oh, okay, you can go. We weren't of interest because, honestly, at the time, we weren't what you'd think of. Like, they talk about reproductive abductions and things of that nature. That's something that we would not fall into that category, just based on our physiology and things that are on our life. We would not fit into the perfect human specimen to do that. So it would just be a catch and release. It's like, oh, it's a trout with three eyes. Let it go.
Mm. Well, that's an interesting take. Yeah.
Again, like I said, with the UFOs, I've done some reading and third person spectating of other people's experiences, and people tend to have the really juicy, fun stories are the ones that are dealing with health and reproductive issues. Something is that if somebody outside was dealing with, you want a zoological specimen for a species, you want a good portion of that, and not someone who wouldn't have three eyes or, you know, right, whatever. I would not be a prime candidate for a species pinpoint. I would be released back into the wild. And I feel that could be in it, or it was just the U.S. military going, okay, they're nobody. They're just going on vacation. Just move along. You know, do nothing to see him, move along. Do the Jedi mind trick and off you go. It could go either way. It could swing either way. Or there could be another reason that I don't even know. I haven't fathomed yet, but that's how I cope. That I was just not prime species for abduction material. So, too.
Last question on this, and it may be hard to tell, especially since it was night. And if you weren't, you know, maybe as familiar with the area as others, then you wouldn't really know this, but I mean, and of course we have to go with the fact that you were going 15 and it's a whole math thing also, but would you be 10 minutes down the road from the last time where your memory was, or were you kind of sort of in the same spot? Do you know anything about that portion of it?
Honestly, I couldn't do mathematically because I'm not familiar with the panhandle enough to say, yes, I could have feasibly been 10 miles down the road and here I was. I can't do that because I do not know it. And the middle of the night. It wasn't in a well-lit area.
Yeah.
So I wish I could provide that because, again, that is a scientific measurable variant that could be, this is what you did from here to here. This is what the deceleration would have to be. Unfortunately, all I can go is by the time, and I can go by the amount of miles per hour drop. So it would have to be just those two and not a triangulated mathematical variable. I couldn't do it.
Oh yeah, no problem. And besides that, you might have been going 50 for 9 minutes and 15 only for the last one. We just don't know, right? So who knows what was actually
we don't know the deceleration or the time frame per each level of deceleration. We just don't know. Could I have slammed on the brakes and then released? I don't know, because conscious mind wasn't there. Only physicality that I can't measure. So
last but not least, and this was at the behest of Mark Muncy, if you're okay to hang around long enough to tell this story, but he wanted you to talk about Sarah the Squatter. And this has to do with Mark's house, I guess.
Yeah. There's Sarah and the Squatter. I completely forgot about the Squatter because he was outside where Sarah was inside. Sarah was a benevolent spirit who was very protective of the Muncy home. He was playful, and she was always indicative of being around as being like a small blue light. And she would manifest in times of distress or in times of danger if something was happening, outside interference, like something that used to come through the Mark's backyard. You could hear it in the leaf litter. It's something big and walking. It would come up to the house and walk around, and you could hear it growl, and It was like a big dog or a big bear, but downtown St. Pete, you really don't get a lot of either in a fenced-in yard. So, Sarah, I saw her once when I was sleeping over. I was in the guest bedroom, and I saw the light come in under the door, and I saw the light come up to the end of the bed, and the bed just ever so slightly, like someone had sat on it. And all I could do was like, "Hi, Sarah," and then go to sleep. And she got playful with the children when Beth and Callie were very young. And one time our friend Pat and I were in the Florida room and he was in the trash. It was like, it was a dog in the trash and picking up the trash bag and then putting it on the floor, picking up the trash bag on the floor. And I was grabbing hold of Pat and I'm like, "Pat, Sarah's in the kitchen." And he's like, "So what?" He rolls over and goes back to sleep. And I'm like, she's literally freaking me out because she's just picking up the trash bag and moving it. And nothing mean or nothing too scary. But one time what really freaked our friend, ironically Jimmy, out was we were all sitting in the living room and we were all playing Dungeons and Dragons and talking and, you know, ribbing on each other. And all of a sudden, right in front of Jimmy or right above Jimmy, there was a bright blue flash, just like somebody had flicked a lighter. A pencil materialized out of the light and dropped right in his lap. And Jimmy just sat there and he picked the pencil up and he set it aside and he just continued on playing when he had just said that he was looking for a pencil. She literally gave him a pencil and we're like, "Oh my God, this is awesome." And Jimmy's like, "Nope."
He was not
having his little brain was done. He was not having it. But yeah, that happened. And that was in the witness to at least six people that were there in the living room. It was just, and then the pencil dropped in his lap.
That is just a cool story.
So Sarah was very cool. Now, the squatter is, I don't know if you're familiar in the paranormal realm of what things are, but there's a creature, it's kind of like a fear monger. It eats the energy of people who are afraid. It's like candy or heroin for the spirits or something. And the fear monger was very much attracted to Hellview Cemetery because we put on literally a hell of a show and we were getting really good energies in there. And we were getting reports of one of our actors touching people. And we're like, none of our actors are supposed to touch anyone. And so we went through and we made sure that nobody was touching people. And our buddy Jimmy, again, he was coming up our easternmost hallway of the haunt. And he saw this guy who was in front of him, who was a guest. It looked like somebody had like shoved him and then flipped his hat off. And then he saw his wallet fall on the ground. And this guy ran. And so Jimmy went over and he picked up the guy's wallet and went to the front of the house to give it to him. There was nobody there in the hallway with him other than Jimmy and those guests. It literally shoved him, knocked his hat off, and took his wallet. And I'm like, this thing is getting dangerous. And it was touching people. And it was drawing from that fear. And it was just getting too physical. And Mark had to deal with that because it was staying too long and it was getting too aggressive. It was one of the strangest happenings that we had at Hellview. And it has been moved on, moved right along the ley line, so to speak, and just kind of moved it out because touching our guests was a bad thing. But that was the squatter. He stayed there for a while. And liked eating fear. It liked inducing fear and liked that. So it has since moved on and has found other digs elsewhere.
Now, when did he first appear? Was it the very first year of Hellview Cemetery?
No. Hellview was a work in progress from the very beginning. It was just started out as just a haunt, a front display. So it was a few years into the full-blown Hellview, where we had the full-blown walkthrough that it took up residence. And it was not active during the off season because it was a normal backyard. And only when we get the walls up where we had to direct the pathways. So it followed the pathways. And so in the off season, it really wasn't active. Just really during the haunt that it was really there. And that last year where it was assaulting people, it had to go. It had to go away. Because even though we tried our best with the safety aspect of Hellview, there were still portions of it. It's still, somebody could get hurt. Let's say if it's like what Jimmy described, it looked like somebody had shoved him from the front, flipped his hat off, and his wallet fell out. That's three very strong events that could have the potential of hurting someone, whether they ran into a wall or they tripped over a scenic item or what have you. It had the potential. So once it was moved on, it energy kind of died way down in the haunt when it was built.
All I know is I hope that one day Hellview is resurrected, and I will absolutely be on a plane and hopefully helping out with that if that ever happens.
I would love it to happen. Unfortunately, like Mark and I and Jimmy and the senior crew who was a part of that, we're all old. And work and building a haunt in the Florida heat, it's hot. It's stifling. And the last couple of years, we had wind problems where we had this beautiful facade on there and the wind was just taking it down. And then of course the ever fun neighbors that don't like having, you know, a popular attraction in the middle of a residential area.
Well, see,
and then the city gets involved in things.
Yeah, that always gets fun. See, the neighbors should have taken advantage of that and started to sell lemonade and popsicles or something. I mean, they could have capitalized on that.
No, I know, right? That's what I was saying. If I lived right next to Mark, that's what I would have done. I would totally been there. It's like, I would have been selling water.
Heck yeah.
And, you know, candy.
They would have cleaned up Tootsie Rolls. See,
it's Tootsie Rolls. Again, medicinal. It helps with the fear.
That's right. It's the fear monger. He won't be able to smell you if you have the Tootsie Roll because you won't be scared. You have a Tootsie Roll.
Exactly. Did it not work in Harry Potter? Chocolate?
Yeah, right.
Dealing with the Dementor? Exactly. The same.
Same,
medicinal.
Same. Well, Sally, it was really a treat to talk to you today. You have incredible stories and insight, and I really, really appreciate it. Do you have anything that you want or need to plug? Do you want to, you know, tell people where to find you? It's totally up to you.
Well, if people want to find me, I'm not really that hard. I'm Lady S. Van Helsing on almost every platform, and that's Lady S. as in Sam or Sally Van Helsing, and that's my Twitter, my Insta, all of that fun stuff. I'm an author, and so you can Google me on Amazon. You can find me there, which I had. My first book was my all of my school papers that I had ever written about werewolves, witches, and ghosts. I took all, it was going to be my thesis, and I just put all of my papers into that. And I wrote a book called Conventionally Speaking about people in their first experiences with conventions and fan conventions major. But for the most part, I wander around the web like a rampant gypsy, and I love it. And if anybody wants to talk to me, you can email me at ladysvanhelsing@gmail.com. And I'll happy to talk with you about any of the things that we talked about today. Or if you just want to say, you like D&D, let's play D&D. And I'm like, okay, let's play D&D.
Well, I will make sure to link your books and all your contact info in the show notes. Thank you so much, Sally.
Absolutely. Thank you for contacting me, and I absolutely been a pleasure talking with you.
Well, I'm so-and-so. I was given this name by my parents. I've been to such and such a college. I've done these things in my profession. I produce a little bio. Buddhist says, forget it. That's not true. That's some story. That's all gone. That's all past. I want to see the real you are now. Well, nobody knows. us who that is. Because we don't know ourselves except through listening to our echoes and consulting our memories. But then there's a real evil, and that again leads us back to this question. Who are you? That is the meaning. We shall see how they play with this exam. By the koans, to get you to come out of your shell and find out who you really are. years when you settle down in the train to read your newspaper and so on, you are not the same person who a little while ago left the platform. If you think you are linking your moments up in the chain. And this is what binds you to the wheel of birth and death. But when you know that every moment in which you are is the only moment, this comes into Zen. A master will say to somebody, get up and walk across the room. And he comes back and he says, where are your footprints? They've gone. So where are you? Who are you? When we are asked who we are, we usually give a kind of recitation of a history.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we talk brainstorms with UX designer Brian. Let's go. First question. You thought you'd see everyone's idea in the team brainstorm, but you've got a grand total of one. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, right? Because in Miro, the team can add ideas now or later. And with Privacy Mode, we can keep them anonymous until they're good to share.
Correct. Next, you need the best way to explain your idea, but all you have is a few sticky notes. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, because, you know, in Miro, I could record videos, add text, images, links, and digital sticky notes, of course, present my thoughts the way I want.
Right again! Now, you're looking for a past idea you thought was just genius. Only you could find... Oh, there it is. Drawing Board or...
Miro. All our finished and unfinished work lives in one place.
And he's won.
Join over 60 million people getting ideas noticed in Miro Brainstorms. Get your first 3 boards for free at Miro.com. That's M-I-R-O.com.